This year is the 50th year of the yeshiva. It's the extraordinary landmark for the community. It's something that we would have hoped and wished that Rav Einemar, whose idea was, and he had hoped that he would, we had hoped he would live for it. He was zocher to live to the 50th anniversary of the shul's founding, and since the yeshiva and the shul to him were one and the same, we would have hoped for him to be with us today. Unfortunately, he's not with us, but Bez Hashem, the legacy that he built, will remain with us. It's now before Rosh Hashanah, and the there are elements of Rosh Hashanah and a 50-year celebration that really, really are very similar and have a lot in common, and we're going to try to focus on those elements. The mitzvah that is in common to both of them is Tkiyah Shofar. Tkiyah Shofar is something which is Rosh Hashanah, that we know, and it is Yovel. It's something which not only does it happen to be both Rosh Hashanah and Yovel, but actually Chazal learn a lot of the halachas from each other. Chazal even formulated a term to describe the uniformity of both of them, and it's Kol HaTkiyos Shebishviyah Shavos, that the blowing of the shofar in both Rosh Hashanah and Yovel are the same. And the question really is, I mean, they seem to us two extremely different Yom Tovim. Rosh Hashanah is all about a Yom Adin. The shofar in Rosh Hashanah is supposed to arouse in us the fear and the awe of Yom Adin, of the impending Yom Adin, and the need to do tshuva, and so on and so forth. That's something that is the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. The shofar of Yovel is all about freedom, releasing the avodim to go home, signaling that he had the property to go back. All of that seems to be very, very distinct one from the other. And yet Chazal told us that the Torah split the halachas between the two, and this sort of creates for us a formulation that any tkiya of the first month, meaning the Rosh Hashanah tkiyas and the Yovel tkiyas, are so similar, the variations on the same sound of Tkiyah Shofar. And it's something that we really need to think about and understand. We also find that the shofar, it is something that is there for freedom. It says, Tka b'shofar gadol l'cheruseinu. The son Nesek Kabetz Goyuseinu. We're supposed to blow with a big shofar for our freedom. Now, on Yovel, we have the whole Jewish people. They're all willing to do the mitzvahs. They're just waiting for that signal to be able to, you know, everyone would just send their avodim free. The Goyim, the Kavash of Gelchar Seiru, is talking about us being amongst foreign nations, being captive, physically, spiritually, and so on. What does it help if we're going to have this Tka b'shofar gadol? Are the nations of the world really interested in doing it? In other words, is this shofar sort of miraculous, like a Yericho shofar, where they're going to come crashing down? I don't think that's the implication of it. It's just, they'll release us. Well, why? They're not listening to, they're not willing to obey. What is it in the shofar that's going to bring our cheres? We say the same formulation in our Shemar Esra and Musaf of shofros. We talk about Kav Shofar Lecheruseinu. So what is this Kav Shofar Lecheruseinu? You actually find when the Jews were released from Mitzrayim, they first had cheres, and then a few days later they went off to Eretz Yisrael. So there's Kavash of Chereseinu, and then there's a Vesonei Sekavash Chereseinu. So we're going to try to see how Shefer creates that element of Cheres, which is obviously extremely significant in Yovel. I want to just add, by the way, the Chinuch says a reason for the Shofar in Yovel, and it's a very, very important reason. It's not relevant to what we'll speak about, but just very, very important to bear in mind his reason. He makes the following observation. Slaves in those days were the equivalent of every means of earning a living. What to us, a factory, a tractor, you have a big field. How do you plant, sow, and harvest? So imagine on Yovel, everybody had to give up their cars. All farmers had to give up their tractors and all other implements. How would that work? It would be very difficult on each and every one of us to do something like that. So the Torah says, if everyone will do it together, it'll be easier. People can do things that are difficult if a tzibur does it together. So that's why we blew shofar, so that everybody together would do it in order to overcome the extraordinary difficulty of sending off avadim for free. I think that it's a very, very powerful reason why tzibur should be together. I really think that's very significant. But it's not the reason that's pertaining to what we're going to speak about. So I would like to go back to the concept of slavery and freedom and where the shofar comes about. If we're to ask ourselves, the term evet, meaning a slave, there are two levels in it. Only one of the two is genuinely a slave in the full sense of the word. Imagine somebody kidnaps me at gunpoint, and he forces me to work the field, and every moment he's standing with a gun over my head or a club or whatever it is. So I am being enslaved, that's correct, but I am not a slave. I still belong someplace else. This is not me. It's just that at any given moment, I need to make a decision. Do I stand up for who I am, or do I save my life? That's not real slavery. But at some point, you begin to understand yourself as belonging to the other. You begin to see yourself as being subsumed to the person who is your master. And now, you really are not a free person anymore. I've read many accounts of the slaves in America. Even if they regained their freedom, many of them drifted back to the farms or whatever were the estates that they were at, because they didn't have the ability to create their own entity, their own family, their own sense of self. That's part of slavery. So slavery really is the sense, your sense, that you belong somewhere else. If we take a look at the parsha in the Torah of what it is, what an Eved Ivri is, who is the one that is affected by Yovel, it's a remarkable description the Torah gives us. A man was sold for 6 years, that's the term of sale for an Eved Ivri, in order to repay a debt or a crime, which is also repaying the debt. Now it says like this. He works for his master, for his new master. And his new master can give him a woman who is a shifcha, and they have children. The children belong completely to the master. The master has to feed the slave and so on. The end of the 6 years comes. Vim omar yomar ha'eved ahafti es adoni es ishtev es bonai lo eitzi chavshi. I like my master so much, I'm not willing to go out free. But, one second, what do you mean, Ishti Banai? This is a very surrogate family. This was only given to you as a means to help the master prosper. It's not your real wife. You have a wife at home. It's not your real children. You have children at home. It's not your home at all. But this person has become so absorbed by his new environment that he's forgotten where his old environment was. And that's the tragedy of an eved. So now the Torah says it will play out for a yovel of years, but we do want him to come back home. There's a home, he belongs someplace. The shofar is going to be the vehicle to liberate the person himself from his sense of belonging there. Let's understand how that happens. Rav Hutner has a long discussion, which I can't go into now, but I want to extract the main point. The shofar is the instrument that can effectively reawaken old impressions that have faded with time. It's just like when you jar somebody's memory, when you shake somebody, every person, when he's been somewhere, every person has a source. Every person has roots, and those roots are there. And even if the person has managed to bury the roots under a thick layer of accumulated material afterwards, they're still there. The reason why the shofar is the instrument for Tchias HaMeisim, for reviving the dead, what this is because nothing ever truly dies. Everything leaves over some footprint in the cosmos, and that footprint is reawakened. Today, we remarkably see something like it. We realize that if one cell is left over from a person or from an animal, you can, you know, from the DNA, you can theoretically reconstruct the same person, so to speak. In other words, things leave over a bare minimum, a sort of zip file of themselves, if you wish to use computer language, and that just needs to be extracted and take out the person. The koach of shofar is specifically to bring out that which is in the person himself, and it was there waiting, and when I blasted the shofar, it awakened. This is true about the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, in the sense that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah doesn't impose on a person something which he is not. Man was created to be divine, to be good. That's the first instance of man. It's Tzelem Elokim. He is in God's image, which means he's good. On top of that was slapped Yetzer Hara, Averis that came up, and a lot of grime that accumulated to cover it. That's come up on top of that. It's a question of how much effort do we need to dislodge that. So when we're blowing the shofar, we're not imposing on a person through a scare tactic, so to speak. We're sort of bullying somebody into doing something we want. We are reminding you of who you were and what was. One of the most heartbreaking, encounters a person can have is when you meet somebody in a fairly advanced state of dementia, and the person most of the time is not aware of his past or anything. And then something sort of sparks the memory, and the person smiles and says, yes, I was once XYZ, or she was once my wife, or these were my children, or something like that. And that's a very, very painful moment, because when someone's dead, we sort of look at it, it's finished, it's over, and that's that. But for somebody who's alive, and deep in him, he has buried a whole world of relationships, of interactions, of experiences, memories. And we know it's there because it just takes the right jarring. It's like when you have a computer on the blink, and it keeps going on and off, and sometimes you sort of give it a little wiggle and it goes on, and you're desperately hoping it's going to stay long enough for you to copy some very important files. That's kind of the feeling you have. So Schaefer is the instrument to awaken that. It works on people for tshuva, because it reawakens the old self there was, and it works on Yovel, because Yovel is the time when we need to awaken the person this element of freedom. The element of freedom is, if you want to describe it in the way in which the Torah describes it, it says, what is Yovel? It says, Ukros and Drobras Vashvashal Kot freedom, Yovel Yitielachem, Vishaftem Ishalachuzosoi Vishal Mishpata Tashuvu. Each goes back to his home. Everyone goes back to what was. That is what Yovel was. So and the first point that we need to do is reawaken the person in the sense that this is his home. He's not going on to new freedom. He's going back home. Him and all the property and all the land, everything goes back to where it was. That's the shofar of Yovel. It's true also about the Jews. It says, Tekah b'shofar gadol chiruseinu, that when the Gula will come, Moshiach is going to blow in the shofar to gather us, to give us our freedom. Well, that's because we are really, really waiting. Our main problem, is first and foremost that we are not, we don't sense ourselves as freedom. Kal Yisrael has gone into Kal Yisrael has gone into Golus, and we are, if we begin to get the sense that this is where we belong. And we're part of whatever entity we're part of, and that's terrible. That's where the real lack of freedom comes, because we're not ourselves. Therefore, when Mashiach will bring the shofar and blow it, we're going to come back to our senses, and it will jog our memory to know that who we really are. That's the shofar of Mashiach. The Rambam writes that in Mitzrayim, when the Jews were there, they had become so absorbed in the Mitzri culture that they just about had forgotten about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything else. They had forgotten about the Emes of Hashem Echad and so on and so forth. That's really, really that's the tragedy, so to speak, of the Jews in Mitzrayim. I'd like to come back a little bit and talk about the yeshiva, its impact in the community, and what the tachlis was. The yeshiva is here first and foremost to infuse Talmud Torah into boys studying Torah, in boys studying Torah at an advanced stage, in people in community coming and studying. There is a level of teaching where you teach people the basics, what you have to do, what mitzvahs, and certainly that's important. Then there's a level of basics where you teach people you give people the reasons why we do it, and that's important, and we inspire them, and that's that. That doesn't require all that much time. And then the question is, well, why do we? Why do we push? It's quite a rugged schedule. And boys have to sit and get up to a level of learning that's quite advanced. The high school boys, by the time they finish, are learning at a level that is yeshiva compatible. Boys come back from Eretz Yisrael, they're busy going to school possibly, getting on with a secular, with a career, and yet they're spending a lot of time studying, advancing their studies, and it's not at all easy, and so on. And people can really come if the long hard day to spend time there. But what's the difference? Why? The answer is the difference between someone who is steeped in studying and learning and does to the person who is just doing because he's been informed and instructed and also sort of been pushed emotionally to do it is, do you feel that you're realizing yourself, or do you feel you're being told what to do? It's so important for a person to feel a realization of self. When we can identify, and it's natural to us, and we understand the halachic process, and we understand the deen and everything else out there, we're in a different position vis-a-vis in terms of doing it. It means it can last, because if we're doing what we feel is a realization of self, then even if we lapse sometimes, but we will come back to it. When you're coming back, people have stormy relationships with parents, but they always look to come back. With a spouse, it's not always the same, because they don't see this, you know, it was, but parents, this is me. And no matter how stormy, there will always be attempts to sort of rectify and come around again, and so on and so forth. If Torah becomes part of yourself, you understand it in a way that is intimate. You just have it. It sort of sits well in you. Then it's impressed itself on a very root level, and where you might take a wrong turn or just sort of lax off a bit, but it's always a process of coming back, and that's why it's so important. That's why it's so important that a kid at a young age gets the skills and the beginnings necessary to learn Torah on that level. That's why when a young man is at his prime, in a sense of intellectual prime, where he's studying college and, you know, he's really, really expected to advance rapidly, and that's a time that's so important to study. It's also important for people to study when they're older, and what they're doing are they are integrating the process into themselves and making part of themselves. I'd like to mention one more aspect of this. The community here is a community that is a very, very bright community. It's a community that is critical in the positive sense of the word, analytical. The fact that the Talmud Torah has taken root, and today the yeshiva is full at night and full on Shabbos and full of people coming in on off days, on federal holidays and learning, and Abbas and Bunim and all the myriad programs, means that somehow people have got the feeling that this is them, this is who they are. It's not something that is imposed on them, but it's something that is part and parcel of who they are. And that's why it's a very, very significant it's a very significant milestone, in that on the Yovel we recognize that this is what's happening in the community. There's one more aspect that I would like to point out, and I think it's something that Ravina Mizrahimovs would have a lot of nachas. The fact that the yeshiva has come full cycle And the one of the best, if not the best, prized Talmud edition of it has in turn become the of the community and has led the community, is leading the community, is something that is so in consonance with Yovel. Yovel means that it to flow. It means that for 50 years things are going in different directions, but at some point everything flows back into itself. It becomes a complete cycle. There are so many positions in yeshiva, and other places have been staffed from the yeshiva. It means that there's a yovel cycle that's happening. We've been drawing from home to home. Shomer is the community that started Silver Spring, and the community in whose lap the yeshiva was formed is a community that most appropriately is the place to start the yovel. When we talk about the end result flowing back into the beginning again and cycling again, that would be the yeshiva coming back to the Shomer community and the Silver Spring community and touching base again. It's not a circle that goes nowhere. I would say a spiral is a better way of putting it. We've finished one loop. We've realized that we hit the right note, that Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah Yeshiva's Brooklyn community has given the community its sense of self. It has produced the leaders that flow back and lead the community, and therefore it's something which Emet Hashem, we hope to continue once again. We hope, like a spiral, to go a notch higher, and yet that same process, what we're trying to do is tap into the very core of who the community and who Chaisel is, tap into that with Talmud Torah, because that's probably the most essential element of it, and God willing, that will flow back into the community. It will enhance the community's quality of Torah life and produce the next generation.